going to have those out. I wear insert.
Good morning. It's 10 a.m. on August 27th, 2019, and I hereby call the meeting of the Stroud County Board of Supervisors to order. And I invite you to join us if you would like to as we say the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everybody. Next, we'll have comment session number one, and that's for comments from public to address topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody who would like to address anything on the agenda? Now, I'll close the public comment session, and we will move on. We have two proclamations for that. Thank you. We'll have to see if Shelley's here. Okay. Adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved. Second.
Okay. Moulton?
Aye.
Chesney?
Aye.
Durkin?
Aye.
Thank you. Now, we will go back to consideration of proclamation. We have two proclamations today, and I will first read the first one, which is proclamation of National Overdose Awareness Day, which is August 30th, 2019. Whereas thousands of individuals die each year from drug overdoses, and whereas the deaths are preventable when resources and education exist, and whereas Story County is not immune from this epidemic, sadly, and whereas Story County has established an opioid task force to combat the problem, and whereas all residents can be a part of solving this epidemic, now therefore be it resolved that we, Story County Board of Supervisors, should hereby proclaim August 31st, 2019, as National Overdose Awareness Day in honor of those who were taken too soon and in hopes that by education and access to services we may help others as well. Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion to approve the proclamation.
And a second?
I second.
Okay, any discussion? Hedden?
Aye.
Wilson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Proclamation is adopted. And we have with us today Colleen Christensen, who is with Community and Family Resources, and she's going to give us a brief report on the opioid task force. Colleen, if you would step up.
Sure.
Thank you.
Yes, I'm Colleen Christensen from Community Family Resources. I am the outpatient supervisor for the Ames and Boone location. But I'm also a member of the Story County Opioid Task Force, so just wanted to provide an update. The Opioid Task Force has continued to work on the goal of providing community education regarding opioids. The task force has hosted several community conversation events, with the last one being held in January, focusing on assessment and treatment options within the community. Last year, a grant was written in conjunction with Ames PD to obtain drug disposal bags that can be utilized to safely dispose of unwanted medication. The team worked together to make the bags for the community conversation that had materials regarding treatment options along with the disposal bag. Currently, several task force members additionally provided a presentation in March to the League of Women's Voters in Ames regarding opioids and treatment options, which this was well attended. Currently, the team has been focusing on a vision and mission statement. The team took two meetings to work on these items, and as a group, we decided on the following. Our vision is advocacy for a healthier community, and our mission is to connect resources to those seeking positive lifestyle changes and providing education and support to community members and professionals. Our next meeting is scheduled for Monday, September 9th, from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. It is located at the St. Andrew's Church in Ames. That address is 209 Colorado Avenue. And everyone is welcome to join the group at any time.
Thank you very much for your work, and thank everybody on the task force. We have another proclamation submitted by Alder Lucy Martin. and its proclamation through National Voter Registration Law. I will read this now. Whereas registering to vote empowers eligible citizens to exercise their right to vote on Election Day, and whereas, while Iowa is one of the nation's leaders in voter registration and voter participation, with more than 2 million residents currently registered to vote, some eligible citizens have not yet registered. And whereas this year is a centennial celebration of women gaining the right to vote through the passage of the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, and whereas one of the leaders of the women's suffrage movement was Iowa, Carrie Chapman Taft, and whereas the voter registration process in Iowa is readily available with applications available throughout government agencies across the state, and whereas the state of Iowa has an online voter registration system enabling citizens with Iowa driver's licenses or non-operator identification cards to register to vote and update their registration status quickly and easily any time of day, and whereas 17-year-olds are not eligible to register to vote so they can participate in Iowa's primary elections, and whereas the need for public information and education regarding voter registration is crucial as Iowa voters prepare to take part in the 2019 state school election, and whereas we encourage all interested citizens and all appropriate media outlets and civic organizations to participate in this nonpartisan voter registration awareness campaign to encourage the maximum participation of qualified voters in Iowa. Now, therefore, we, the Board of Supervisors of Story County, do hereby proclaim September 2019 as National Voter Registration Month and September 24, 2019 as National Voter Registration Day. Would entertain a motion to approve the proclamation?
I would so move.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Olson, second Hedden. Any discussion?
None. Other than I'd like to say I've been a proud member of the League for 15 years of a second generation member. So I'm always a Christian religious.
Thank you.
Olson?
Aye.
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Proclamation is approved, and we have some people here from the League of Women Voters, and I'm going to recognize Carolyn Klaus, who has for many years now headed up the voter registration efforts of the League in Troy County. To give us some information, Carolyn.
Well, I'm Carolyn Klaus, and when I joined the League, Linda was the president at the time. She says, what do you want to work on? And she says, we haven't done voter registration aggressively, and we're now aggressive. So, and we look forward to working with Lucy Martin, our county auditor, with training our members so we do it correctly. We've already started. We got 11 of them just over the weekend with Lincoln Highway Days and Destination Iowa State. So, we want to make sure everybody in the county is registered, and if they've moved, they've updated it. So we look forward to making sure everybody gets to vote. So thank you.
Thank you,
Carolyn.
We will move on now to agency reports, which is what we have done. And going to consideration of the minutes, I would entertain a motion for the approval of the August 20th.
So moved.
Second.
Evans?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes are approved. Next would be consideration of personnel action.
So moved as presented.
Second.
Any discussion? Olson?
Yes.
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Personnel action is approved. And moving on to our consent agenda.
I would move that we approve as presented.
Second.
Evan?
Aye.
Evan?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda items are approved as listed. Now we will go on to public hearing. Consideration of resolution 20-13 FY20 budget amendment. Lisa Markley, the auditor's office. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning. I provided all the documentation when we sent this to publication. If there are any questions, please feel free to let me know. It was published on 8/15 in all three newspapers as required by law so that it can be voted on today. As I said earlier, the revenues for this amendment are increasing by 26%, which includes the bond proceeds, obviously. And expenses are increasing by 13.38% from our original budget. Most of that is the Storytown payment of $1.5 million for the current year. And $569,530 is for urban renewal projects that are carried forward and conservation expenses. And $3,460 are for capital projects carried forward. So with this amendment, the general ending fund balance will be about 28%. We budgeted it at 33%, so it's down from, obviously, from the budgeted. Any questions?
I'll move adoption of Resolution 20-13.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Okay. It's the public hearing item. So I'm going to open the public hearing. Are there any comments from the public? See, nobody moves the microphone. I'll close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
Now I'll make the motion to adopt Resolution 20-13.
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion? Edmonds?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Murphy? Aye. Resolution is up. Thank you very much. Now we will hear from Amelia Schoenemann from Planning and Development regarding the second consideration of Ordinance 284. Good morning.
Good morning. It's the vet clinic rezoning that you all heard last week. You recommended approval on first consideration. And so today, we haven't received any more comments. Staff would recommend that you approve the ordinance on second consideration, and you could waive third, or you could set a hearing for the third consideration for next Tuesday.
Is there any discussion before I open the public hearing? Okay, then I would open the public hearing on second consideration of ordinance number 284. Are there any members of the public wishing to comment? Would you please come to the microphone? Seeing nobody moves the microphone, I will close the public hearing and entertain a motion which may or may not include waiving the third consideration.
I move approval of second consideration of ordinance number 284, amending certain boundaries of the official zoning map of Story County, and move for waiving of the third reading.
Second.
I'll second.
Any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Murphy? Aye. Ordinance number 284 then will be set for a public hearing for.
We're done.
Okay. We have adopted that. Now we will go to second consideration of ordinance number 285, stormwater management and erosion settlement control ordinance.
Yes, and so similar, you had first consideration last week. You recommended approval. So today is second consideration. We did receive one comment in support this morning from Cindy Hildebrand, who was unable to make it to the meeting, but have received no other comments. On this one, staff would recommend you could waive third consideration, but typically with ordinances that amend the code of ordinances rather than rezonings, there is a third consideration, and so you could set that for September 3rd if you wanted to go that course.
You're recommending that we do a third consideration?
Yeah.
Okay, is there any discussion before I open the public hearing? Okay, then I'll open the public hearing on ordinance number 285. Anybody who would like to speak to that, please come forward to the microphone. Seeing nobody moving forward, I will close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the second consideration of ordinance number 285, amending Chapter 85.08, definitions in Chapter 88.05, Environmental and Natural Resources Standards for Storage, Water Management and Erosion and Sediment Control for the control of the Story County Land Development Regulations, Story County Court of Ordinances, and set a third and final consideration for September 3rd, 2019.
I second.
Any discussion? Question if not, Evans?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Okay, Merkin, aye. So, have second consideration and third consideration on September 3rd.
Thank you
so much, and thank you for all of your work on this.
Thanks.
Additional items? you need a break?
I'm good. I'll just wind it back.
Okay. Additional items. Again, Mr. Marco, consideration resolution 20-14.
So, since you amended the budget, in order for the departments to spend those dollars, we have to appropriate. You have to appropriate those dollars. Originally, original appropriations at 50% of each department's budget was done in June, at the end of the last fiscal year. So, this amends the individual departments' budgets for this amendment. This amends the appropriations for this amendment that you just approved.
I'll make a motion to approve resolution 20-14.
Second.
I will second.
Any discussion? Second?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Bergen? Aye. Johnson? Thank you. Now, 2015 Interfund Operating Transfer Amendment.
So, as the first one, in order to do the transfers that are budgeted, we the Board of Supervisors has to have a resolution for such. The first resolution that you did for this for the fiscal year did not include the additional $9,500 that will be in TIF availability. So I'm just amending it right now so we have all those dollars taken care of for the year. This should be it. We shouldn't have to do any more interfund operating transfers for the year.
I move that we approve resolution 2015 for the interfund operating transfer.
I second.
Any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Morgan? Aye. Thank you very much. Now we'll hear from County Engineer Darren Moon regarding the FY19 official report. Good morning, Darren.
Morning.
Morning.
I knew that was going to happen.
Oh, no.
I thought I would phone this. Sorry. Put out of it.
See you, bud. Okay. I can get started here. Typically, the annual report we just send through on the consent agenda, but with the newer board, I kind of want to real briefly just explain what it is and why we do it. It's a report we submit to the Iowa DOT. The DOT has quite a bit of oversight over secondary road departments for a number of reasons. One, we have a secondary road fund, which has a lot of requirements attached to it. They need to make sure all that money is spent on road purposes only. So this report kind of spells out where we spend all of our money throughout the year. That report's due by September 15th each year to the DOT. We generally have four categories, engineering administration, some maintenance items, and then construction. When we budget, we can't go over any of those items by 10% or more, or we have to do a budget amendment. This report kind of summarizes how we spent all the money to make sure we didn't go over that 10%. I'd be showing it to you right now. I'm trying to think what else I could do. Oh, we back up. Again, these are those four categories. I'm not sure what happened there. Okay. Then at the very bottom, it summarizes our financial situation. We have an end fund balance of almost $4.6 million. That's getting a little high. This fiscal year, we've got that down to, I think, $2.5 million. So we're slowly drawing that down. We like to be around the $2 million range or a little less. Just the general sheet here, one of them showing our maintenance items, and all these codes you see in the front are the codes that our employees put on their timesheets whenever they do certain work to charge to those categories. That's a requirement of the DOT. Then one of the more important sheets in here, especially for the board, is for budgeting, especially, is the local effort sheet. What this is we are required to raise at least 75% of what we can raise for levies for secondary roads. If we don't get that 75%, they take away money from us out of our farm to market account. So these are the secondary road levies right here. The max amounts are right here that you can levy. So total we can levy 3.64. We are levying 2.9. We have about $700,000 that we kind of leave on the table there. That's more of a budget discussion we'll have in the upcoming months. But so we're at 80% local effort percentage, and that's only because we count this $250,000 from local option sales tax we put towards our motor grader lease. So we're typically in that 75 to 80 range usually. I would say most counties max that out and actually supplement additional with local option money. So again, that's more of a budget discussion we'll have later. The DOT summarizes the annual report so you can see what all the counties are doing. As I commented, a lot of counties get local option sales tax directly inserted in the secondary road fund. Story County does not show it because we don't actually transfer that to secondary roads. It's spent directly out of the loss fund, so it doesn't show up in this category. I'll skip that. That's more budget discussion, but just in general, that's what it is. Are there any questions about the annual report at all? If not, I'd recommend approval.
Any questions?
Any questions? I just saw a comment, the slide that you have where you showed the all the counties in the state of Iowa.
Yeah.
I don't see that in that was uploaded in the documents here.
No.
That's just something that you could share. I just for interest, I would just like to see that.
Sure, I can. Yeah, I'll email it to you. That's something the DOT has on their website.
Is it right on their website? So I just go
not
ahead.
On ours. On DOT's, and it's a little hard to find, so I'll just
email
it to you.
Yeah, even if you sent me the link, that would be fine too.
Sure, so. No problem.
I'll move approval of the report.
I'll second that motion. Discussion? Mm-hmm.
Aye.
Motion
aye. Budget
open
down.
Motion carries.
And Darren,
you want to go ahead and talk
us
about Cameron School Road,
Steven Affair? Okay. We had a request, this came from a developer, but it was combination of a personal experience of an accident there and some growth that's planned in the area, and some other homeowners in the area have requested some lower speeds in this area as well. So I've looked at it. I have recommended lowering the speed. It's currently 50 miles an hour through this area. That was passed back in the year 2000, and at that point, typically when they do a speed study, in 2000 the DOT did that for us. They no longer supply that service, so if we did speed studies now, we'd have to probably hire a consultant to go out and do that. This doesn't require it because it's close enough to the stop intersection here. This is the stretch we're talking about. This is GW Carver. This is Cameron School Road. This is currently 50 miles an hour. I've recommended 30 miles an hour up to about this point. And then from here down to just past the Valley Road, which is Squaw Valley Subdivision, about right here is the 40 mile an hour. So we have 50 coming into 40 and then 30 up to the stop. Because we have a stop condition, we typically don't use about a half mile stretch in a speed study anyway. So it's basically just engineering judgment at this point on what we set that at. We have some major developments planned, a commercial node in this corner, and then some major housing. So it's only going to grow in traffic, and they're going to add some intersections and driveways as well. So traffic's already slowing down when they come up to the stop. So once we get past here, I didn't feel like I could reduce it lower than the 50, because that gets back to the speed study that we're supposed to do if we do any speed limit change out in the county. What we shoot for is the 85th percentile speed, and that's the curve. And the 85th percentile is at the bottom of this curve. The more you try to adjust from that 85th percentile speed, the chances of being in an accident go up both sides. So we try to set the speed limit within 5 miles per hour, that 85th percentile speed. And that's done by checking radar out on the road. And that was done back in 2000. And that's when they determined we couldn't go any lower than 50 through there. And I doubt speeds have gone down any through there the past 20 years. So it's probably gone up. Accidents through the area. Each dot is an accident. The red ones are in 2019. There's been 51 accidents in the past, I think, 11 years is this report. More than half of those were animal, with kind of a big problem on that road. A lot of deer accidents on that road. So you could take about half those accidents out, because there isn't much you can do about animal accidents. A graph of breaking out the years. Did see a spike here in 18 and 19, so a little concerned about that. So I checked into a little bit more on why that was. In 2019, I had 11 accidents, and 7 out of 11 were animal-related. So a lot of deer accidents this past year. So it really wasn't a traffic and safety type issue. It was more of just animals. You can see from the red dots that Squaw Valley comes through here, and that's the wooded area that most of the deer come through that area. That's why all the red 2019 accidents show up in that area. So with that, unless you have any questions, that's my recommendation for the speeds. And I did, since Ames plans to annex the south side of that, I sent this to them yesterday, and they didn't have any comments, so I assume they're okay with it. But they have not annexed it yet, so it's still under county control completely.
Well, I think it's, even though there's going to be annexation coming along, and some other changes might happen because of that, I think it's good that we address that, because there is more traffic, which is probably right. Why there's more deer accidents, because there's more cars there.
True.
You know, and we had had some requests to drop the speed limit even further than that, but Darren had provided us, as well as those accident numbers, with some information that basically says you don't want to reduce your speed limit too low, because that's going to be a frustration to people, and you're going to have probably more accidents, probably people passing, mm-hmm. those kind of things. So
sure.
I drove it again yesterday, and yeah, it's going to be a drop, but I think it's a good gradual drop, and I think the places you look at are right, considering where all the accesses are and all that. I'm pleased that you brought this to us. Questions.
Yeah, I drive that road all the time, so you know, I see cars that just go whizzing on by, and yeah, the deer traffic's pretty heavy around there.
Yes.
You want to be very vigilant when you drive that particular road. So,
okay, so I would entertain a motion.
So moved. I move resolution 20-16.
I second.
Okay, any further discussion? Evans?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Murphy?
Aye.
So, resolution carries. Thank you.
Thank you. One quick comment on that I just thought of. We have a new program, LTAPS, the local transportation conglomerate in Ames that serves all the counties in Iowa. They have these new speed trailers, you know, that show your speed when you're traveling down the road. They bought two of them for all counties to use. I might try to get one of those, just to test it out and put it out there once we get it posted to kind of warn people of the new traffic.
I think that would be a good idea. Can you tell me, do you have any idea when you'll post it?
The actual posting, probably in the next week or two. We'll have to get one call and everything for the signage, but the speed limit won't take effect till the signs are up, of course. But,
good idea. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we're going to hear from Carlwell on a couple of matters. The first, consisting of the Enterprise Associated Summer Enrichment Program at Collins Maxwell. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. So this is a request from United Way of Story County to partner in sharing for the summer meal costs for the summer enrichment program that took place at Collins Maxwell Schools. The program ran from June 3rd through July 11th. There were 62 children that participated. I believe the county and United Way have partnered in the last couple of years to share the meal costs. So the request right now is for up to 50%, which is $1,245.30 to share in that cost. The meals were provided by the Collins Maxwell School District. Any questions on that?
None. As you say, we've done it for the last couple of years, and actually, we don't build it into the budget right now, but I suppose we probably should start looking at doing that.
Sure, you bet.
Yeah. I have no questions.
I would entertain a motion to assist in the dollar amount.
I move that we contribute $1,000. Let me blow this up here so I can read my own. That we contribute $1,245.30 toward the meal program from the summer enrichment program in Collins Maxwell School District.
I will second.
Okay, any discussion? Wilson?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. Approved. And then the next is use of the assets dollars.
Correct, yeah. So we have some dollars from the asset FY19 funding cycle that have been contracted for but not spent or drawn down from the agencies. So for the general fund, it's a total of $11,574.42. $335.20 of that was for the asset administrative line item. And then for local option, it was $2,978.39. And I listed for you some options for consideration. You could apply the dollars to revert back to their respective funds, apply some or all of the dollars towards the $97,725 match for the 7 new HRTA vehicles that the board had previously approved funding for, roll over some or all of the dollars to FY20 and set aside for service needs that may arise during the fiscal year, apply the dollars which we just talked about, apply the dollars toward funding a share of the food costs for the summer enrichment program at Collins Maxwell. The other option that I didn't have listed here but thought of as well could be the $3,690 that the board had approved for the HRTA funding for the loss of the portion of the Aging Resources Grant.
And I did check with Assistant Auditor Ms. Marco yesterday, and am I correct that the local option funds could be used for the Collins Maxwell?
Certainly.
Okay. So, thoughts we want to discuss before we make a motion, or does somebody have a motion to carry?
Well, I like the suggestion about using the $1,245.30 for that we just approved, that coming out of local option funds that are there. Also the $3,690 that we just approved for HRTA could come out of those, the general fund. And I'm looking at Lisa Markley. Would the remainder of the local option, would that go towards that HRTA for the replacing the aging resources money, given the fact that those are for trips outside of Ames? Those are for people who are living in the rural areas?
Certainly, if that's how you opted to...
I mean, if that's how you want to, you know, use it. Okay.
I'm coming.
Okay, thank you.
So the local option sales tax dollars need to be primarily intended to benefit the unincorporated areas. That is a decision of the Board of Supervisors. does this primarily intend, is it primarily intended to benefit the unincorporated areas? So if that's your thought process, then yes, but that could certainly be used that way for that coming out of the world.
Okay. Thank you. And I'm just trying to do the math to use them all up appropriately.
Some would have to come from the general fund for the
correct
project, but
to fill the rest of that.
If we just stated something like $36.90 for the HRDA funding plus the $12.45, as much as possible of that out of local option, and then the general fund, the remainder of the general fund could go towards the HRDA buses.
Sounds good.
So just so I'm clear, so the $12.45 would go towards the meals?
Mm-hmm. For,
okay, I'm just trying to write this down.
Options.
Right.
And then $78.
And then you want all of the rest to go towards the HRDA vehicles? Is that what you're...
Might as well.
Yeah. I just want to make sure I'm clear. I just didn't quite catch that.
It doesn't really matter.
It doesn't really matter, but it seems to just make it clean. These are things we've already approved. So.
Okay, so you I'll entertain a motion.
I'll move. Okay. That we use local option money to pay the $1,245.30 for the summer enrichment program, the remainder of the local option money to go toward the $3,690 that we previously approved as the HRDA replacement of local resources money, and with any additional money needed to fill in that entire $3,690 to come from the general fund asset dollars and any remaining general fund asset unspent dollars to go toward the 7 new HRDA vehicles.
I'll second the motion.
Further discussion?
Aye.
Aye.
Merkin,
aye. Motion carried. Thanks
for spelling that out.
Thank you.
Thanks, Lisa.
Okay.
Jill
Lawson now for proposal from
RMS
Architects for
Command
Plan Services
for the
model project
adjustment. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. I'll start with a little background on this. On our capital improvements plan, we had a project listed as Justice Center Courthouse and Building Security, Attorney's Office Consolidation, and Jail Maintenance and Study and Planning, scheduled for fiscal year 19. Well, shortly after budget work sessions for fiscal year 20, we come to light we could acquire some unused courtroom space that is directly adjacent to the county attorney's office. So that original project, the main scope of it was to gain space for the county attorney's office. Well, now that we have some available directly connecting to their current space at the Justice Center, we kind of need to separate that out of that project, which was potentially an infill of the courtyard at the Justice Center and then incorporating some jail maintenance. So this proposal is to get an architect in and evaluate the needs of the county attorney along with available space we have now, which is potential to gain about 2,000 square feet and kind of get a schematic design with an accurate cost estimate. So we'd have that as we move in this fall to our capital improvements plan committee meetings and kind of discuss how we want to move forward with this project, most likely separate it into two different projects and kind of determine when we want to start it, because it's kind of potentially scheduled as a fiscal year 21 project, but nothing set in stone. So
I'd like to make a comment, because Joby and I spoke yesterday about this, because if you look at our current approved capital improvement plan, all of it actually shows up in fiscal year 19. And so as we go through to discuss the capital improvement plan for this next, headed into fiscal year 21 and beyond, I think we might be a good opportunity for us to maybe change that form a little bit so it's clear what's a carryover project more and whatever. So I just, that's a comment. Now I do have a question for you. So since this is the county attorney part of the remodel, does that also include any requests that may have come from the judicial district itself or, you know, for any changes they're interested in?
Yes, we plan to meet with the judicial staff to take into consideration any of their requests that they might like to see during this remodel.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I guess, did the county attorney's office have any, I mean, did they have any input or any questions in regards to the proposal that you're looking at here?
Yes.
Well, it kind of came out of the, if I might.
Sure.
The idea of doing this kind of came out of a meeting that we had with county attorney's office, with the associate district judges and the district court judge here, and also the court administrator for the second judicial district. Because we have the responsibility to provide space to the courts. In some of the space the courts are currently using, we decided it might be good to kind of pull everybody together to talk about it. And I think it was very helpful having the court administrator involved. And he said he would like to continue to be involved in that process because it is really his responsibility for Story County as well as the other counties in the second district to work with the counties on space for the judges. So they're, that county attorney's office is aware, the judges are aware, and the district court administrator is aware.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, we've had a couple of initial meetings, and there'll be probably a handful more. And I've met with Jessica individually on it as well to kind of gain a just a broad understanding of what her needs in her office are. Because I think there's some parts of it she may bring some of her staff from the Ames location at the Human Services Center back to the Nevada location where they truly need to work out of.
Sure.
Okay. There are some access, egress.
Yeah, there's a private entry, egress, and some parking issues that are kind of all part of the kind of overall scope of the plan.
I guess my other comment is I find this quote for RMA $3,250 to be very reasonable,
yes,
considering what we've seen for architectural as a percentage of
sure
projects, and this is still projected about a $350,000 project.
Yes, correct.
A very reasonable quote.
Yeah.
And this is just going to be conceptual.
Yeah.
Not
yeah,
going to be anything that an engineer is going to take and say, okay, you can go for.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't anticipate it being huge either.
No, but yeah, this is just basically just some drawings and then a little professional insight on space needs analysis and then having a accurate, you know, cost estimate. Instead of using a basic, you know, price per square footage cost estimate, they plan to bring in a professional service to actually evaluate the building and how it's constructed to give an accurate estimate. And I think that would be very beneficial as we move into budget discussions to kind of limit the surprises we have when we get into that construction phase.
Any other questions? Anything else,
Jody? No, it's pretty straightforward, and I agree, like you commented on, that the price is pretty reasonable considering what will actually be provided with.
I'll
make a motion to approve the $3,250 for the schematic design remodel project at the Justice Center.
I second.
I would point out that there might be
room
to them with $5 per square foot.
Yeah.
Sure.
We shouldn't foresee much on that because with Matt Boak, our GIS guy, he can do a lot of that in-house now for us. So,
yeah.
So that helps. Yep.
Okay. Any other further discussion? Hedden?
Aye.
Wolfman?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye.
Thanks
for your work on this.
Thank you. You're welcome.
We have something else for us.
Yes.
And Spencer,
I'll
good morning, Melissa.
This one is Secondary Roads is all but vacated their West Ames shed. They built a new one in Kelly. Is that correct, Darren? So, and for a few months now, emergency management's been housing some of their equipment, primarily a I'm going to ask for you to say what the two trailers are named.
We have our mass care trailer and our command and control trailer are both hot rooms.
Basically, Secondary Roads is still currently paying the utilities of this property and don't really have anything on the books for maintenance and upkeep. So we're just kind of looking at some direction on how we should handle the utilities and should we kind of develop a little agreement with emergency management, whether it's a formal lease agreement to kind of cover utility costs and small maintenance and upkeep of the property. So we determine what we want to do with the property in a long-term fashion. I think we need to have kind of a five-year plan on it. The building is in kind of poor shape, but it's not in the condition that it's not unusable at this time. We should be able to get a few years worth of good use out of it.
So you're just talking about keeping the roof above the foundation.
Yeah, exactly. You know, weed control, snow removal in the winter, you know, little things like that.
And it's something we want to keep cost neutral to the county, and that's why in discussions that Joby and I had was trying to come up with a, whether it be a lease or some type of agreement with the county. Using that space will greatly extend the life of our trailers. We do have some electrical requirements for the command trailer to keep batteries charged, and then we also have an automatic external defibrillator that is going into our mass care trailer, so when our teams are out with the shelters, they have that capability to provide that assistance to folks, and so we do need something that is a little bit climate controlled in order to extend the life of the batteries on the AC as well.
One of the things I would like to see as we go forward, regardless of what we decide today about whether we do a lease or just put the cost in with facilities, but is that we get a good handle on exactly what it's costing, not only here with this situation to the county, but also the other entities who are storing. Right now we're storing the equipment out at the fairgrounds, and there's some equipment IVRM still wants to store, and then the sheriff. And there had been a committee about 3 or 4 years ago that had been formed to take a look at going out to the property on 210th, the old county home property as it's called a lot, to build a building. And my understanding is it's about 120 feet by 40 feet, but the cost kept rising on it because it needed to be climate controlled, at least part of it, because of some emergency management requirements and maybe some other equipment that needed to have that, and they needed a lot of energy to it or whatever. So, Joby, I understand the plans are still in your with you, right?
Yeah, and I think overall we've got multiple offices and departments that have storage needs at this
right.
point. So I think we need to form another committee, and we need to get into a more detailed, you know, space needs study, which is for storage, mm-hmm. you know, and how this plays into that.
Right.
Be determined, but
right.
Yeah.
And I think so. I think that what we do in the short run here, but when you mentioned 5 years,
yeah.
I'd like to see that committee for to get back or some version of the committee to get back together, looking at space needs. I know that the previous committee, the cost and the expectations rose quickly, mm-hmm. as from a basic. Meet our needs to maybe some bells and whistles on that. So,
yeah.
But I'd like to see us at some point you bring that for us.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and I think things have changed a little bit since that last committee, and maybe it's something that we look at instead of trying to incorporate everything in one location in one large facility. We kind of break it up and maybe address the cold storage in one facility and then address some of the climate controlled storage in a different facility. We have some options at other county owned property, you know, it, whether or not, you know, it's feasible, because some of it needs to be in certain locations, and trying to incorporate it all in one big facility, I think is not the direction we need to go with at this point.
And related to certain location, Melissa, it's kind of my understanding, I spoke briefly to Keith yesterday, that preferably long-term, you guys feel a more central location than West Ames is a benefit to emergency management?
Yes, if we had our choice, something in the Nevada area would be great. However, we're willing to work within whatever capability there is to be able to start. Having the West Ames location came as such as a convenience to us, but Nevada would be a desirable location.
Joe, do you think it would help to have some kind of outside technical assistance in this process?
Yes, I think that is probably the best direction to take. Some a professional that can evaluate whether it's equipment, documents, you know, that type of thing that needs stored, instead of everybody just saying, I feel I need this many square footage. I think a professional insight would be beneficial with
this.
Your
location is, as you said, what's the location? What's the best location
yep.
for certain things? Putting everything under one roof, regardless of function, doesn't. It may sound good in terms of, well, that'd be really efficient, because all the other things come under gross efficiency.
Yep.
So I'm just thinking that sometimes that's a little bit of planning money that helps you make the right decision.
Yep, I agree.
So maybe you could work with a little sound and pull something together.
Yep.
Any other questions?
No, I guess just the question that's before us is, what do we want to do with it currently right now? Is it a formal rental agreement or?
If it's 5 year, would a year-by-year agreement be something that would be okay to renew annually?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're saying this building probably has a lifetime more than 5 years, and that's a lot of money into it.
Correct.
It doesn't really certainly be at this point or doesn't be an investment. We direct Jovi to come back with something that was a little bit more done, and he can come back to something in your year.
Yep.
Yeah. And I would hope that, you know, we look at just passing on just the basic costs to emergency management. That, I mean, you guys are sometimes struggle with a tight budget anyway. Joby struggles with a tight budget also, but at the same time, you're not experts in maintaining the building. Jody can figure out exactly what he's got to put money into and what we should leave alone. Because I believe, Darren, haven't we actually had offers on that or inquiries in the past for it to be purchased, right?
Not an actual financial offer. The owner with the storage facility around it just kind of wants it out of the way.
And I'd just like to add, since you brought it up, is the people that own the storage complex that's basically this sits right in front of is interested in it, and then it's kind of some new interest in it. Some people have recently bought the old Doughboy elevator and have a long-term plan for that, and they had approached me when I was out there taking some photos of the building to kind of prepare for today, and they have some interest. So at what level, it's hard to say, but I think it's something that we know there's value to it. What that value is, we could determine that in this five-year plan as we kind of determine, do we, you know, keep the property and either repair the building, build a new building on that location, or sell the property and do something in a different location. But for now, just having something, you know, basically a dollar amount just based off of utility costs, and just kind of, like I said, keep the roof on the place.
Okay.
So you'll bring something back.
Yep. We'll sit down, come up. I'll put some numbers together, and then we can, you know, county attorney's office take a look at it and get some input from them and come back with something more official.
Okay.
All right.
Good. No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'm fine. Wandering the back, I think.
With the Carter, consideration amendment to the
Good
morning, Leanne.
Good
for the delay, but technology going now. Was here roughly, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, with the annual updates to the Cornerstone to Capstone Comprehensive Plan. I have a very similar presentation to that, only I've broken out into two elements. The agenda item right now that's before you for consideration is specific to the plan, so I'll go through the proposed changes, and then later on under other reports is direction on the implementation matrix. So that should help with today's goals. Any questions before I begin on that? Okay. Again, you've seen these. A plan was adopted in June 2016. I'm breezed through these. These are the kind of progression of developing a plan to actual implementation. And the annual review. As I said a couple weeks ago, this should have come before you last fall, but given a number of different circumstances, we're here. And so we'll actually start the annual review again here in a relatively short time frame. We might switch to this schedule, though, rather than fall presentations. I do think it fits well following the end of a fiscal year to do this type of annual review. So what we do is we check in, see where we've been with the plan, different amendments, different priorities and work program items to get an idea of what the proposed changes should be brought forth to the board, if any. And this year we did, in the past couple of years, looked at all these general review questions. But we looked at each element of the plan, involved Story County Conservation, the county engineer, planning and development, environmental health, and myself, and different other entities within Story County staff to look at the plan, and then to go right into the proposed modifications. Obviously, to the table of contents, we added some, and the plan organization on page 1-3 added other appendices because we do have new appendices proposed to be added. Stop me as I go with any questions, please. Then to the foundation chapter, chapter 3, this sets the vision and goals and the objectives and strategies for the plan. On page 1-8, revised the average median values for housing to reflect 2018 values. This is something, as those statistics are released, specifically in the next couple of years with new census information, we want to keep these reflecting the most up-to-date data that we can find. And then go on to Chapter 4, Conservation of Natural Resources and Recreation. We removed the strategic plan, which is part of the appendix that talks about strategic planning, which is a new appendix. And then on pages 4-2, 4-4, 4-5, and 4-7, we added language that starts with current efforts. So it's like an update of what's happening in that specific area or in regards to that specific goal statement. Going on to land use, added again current efforts on page 5-4, and had to, because we did that, had to reorganize the entire page actually. On economic prosperity, chapter 6, It seems like there's an enormous amount of changes when you look at the screen, but really a lot of it's just cleanup to reflect some of the activities that have occurred in Story County. Reformatted the graph on page 6-3. It was really difficult to see any differentiation in the previous graph. Added references to the 2016 Labor-Shed study, and again, this is something that once a new Labor-Shed study gets released in a couple of years, we'll have to change it again. And let me back up. These all demonstrate how when the plan was adopted in 2016 with that board and now this board, it's viewed as a living document. It's not just static, put on the shelf. It's always being reviewed, always being considered for changes as necessary to match current situations. On page 6-7, there were references regarding DuPont. DuPont is no longer here in Lincoln Way Energy. We took those out from the right column, beginning with communities in Story County, blah, blah, blah. And page 6-8, we add the language regarding the Prairie View industrial area annexation to a section, and then removed in regards to the facade grant program. Since the program's inception to date, that's a number that's always changing as new projects are approved or considered by the board, so I just recommended taking that out. Actually, kind of make it a little bit easier on staff. Pages 6-9 and 6-10 deal with the Urban Renewal Area Program. Kind of did the opposite than I just said with the facade grant. I added more updated the dates and list of projects and amounts awarded. I might suggest to the board a future revision, we just take those out as well, too, kind of like we did with the facade grant program. But that's a larger program, so I think it deserves some language in the plan. 6-11 updated the businesses for Home Base Iowa, the number. And then added a page about the Story County Economic Development Group on page 6-12. Actually, I don't know how we got through without one on that. And then added the model stormwater ordinances to the goal on goal 3 on page 6-14. Any questions under economic prosperity? And then to the transportation, chapter 7, on page 7-2, added to the objective T1.1 within funding frameworks at the end of the objective, just to clarify some expectations. Removed language regarding the master transportation plan, added the Shedd and Kelly to list of facilities on page 7-11. Updated the map on page 7-14 and the traffic counts. Again, this once those are updated, we'll have to amend those. Amended, removed the strategic plan language on page 7-18 and reorganized that page. And then the current version actually had details regarding the detour for the I-35 flyover project. Hopefully we can just remove those since the detour is done, not necessarily open yet, but removed those details. And then the appendices, we did a survey in July 2017, the same survey that was done initially. We revisited that, and I may be back in front of the board this fall to talk about what kind of follow-up we do. And so added those results. Added new Appendix E, which is both the Board of Supervisors strategic plan and the Conservation Board strategic plan, and then new Appendix F, which is the countywide watershed assessment. So with that, are there any questions on any of that? And that later on is implementation matrix.
Any questions, board?
I have no questions. I have a comment that this shows some of your best skills where you really shine, Leanne, and being able to track all of this, understand how they fit together, and understand how these need to be updated so that we've got a continuous and consistent plan going forward. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I'll pass that. My major professor, my graduate program, probably be really glad to hear that.
Okay.
I'll pass it on to her. Thank you.
No, I have no questions.
And I entertain motion on the proposed amendments to the
I move that we accept these amendments to the Cornerstone Capstone Plan as presented.
Second.
I'll second the motion.
Any further discussion? Ms. Wilson?
Aye.
Second.
Aye.
Perkins, aye. Thank you. And I second Supervisor Wilson's comment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. So because two of you have not seen this presentation on what KubeCog is all about, I have some introductory slides. Linda, I know you were part of the exercise that we did this spring, but I thought it'd be just beneficial to spend just a brief few minutes on this. KubeCog, other than being really fun to say, which Alex does agree with, by the way, our intern, is continuity of operations and continuity of government. It relates to ensure that if circumstances disrupt normal operations, we have a way to maintain that level of continuity at whatever level is determined it's needed to be. Benefits of KubeCog, you can anticipate threats. You're adaptable to any change. You hope you're adaptable to any change that can come your way. You can not only increase performance and reaction to those changes, but overall increase our operational performance from day to day as we delve into details. Determine our vital resources and improve overall communication. This slide, every time I show this, I say I need to go try and find the study again. It is a dated study from 2016, but it shows where, when you're looking at continuity of government, continuity of anything, actually, where the weakest links lie. And really, it's at the people and the process. I think if I can find an updated study, that technology risk has probably bumped up considerably, and the data risk as well. But I think that you'll still see the same type of stratification because people are the commonality in all of it. So going back a few years ago when we started talking about continuity planning, we developed the plan with help of a program committee. All the elected officials and department heads appointed someone or represented the officer department on the program committee. We worked over about a year and a half to develop the KubeCog, brought to the Board of Supervisors for adoption. And then from that point on, we followed this process. We did risk assessment, looked at analysis of the different impacts, did resource needs, looked at agreements, and developed some objectives. And we used two guidance sheets, the continuity government for non-federal governments, and then planning worksheet in Word format. And then I took it kind of a step beyond this, working with ISAC in the past couple of years, and developed a framework for ISAC then to share with other counties based on some of our lessons learned as well. So the plan that's before you today has been adopted, updated a couple times annually. I do come before the board to recommend changes if necessary. According to Iowa Code Section 22.7, subsection 50, certain public records may be kept confidential, including information concerning emergency preparedness developed for the protection of governmental employees, visits to the government body, or property under the jurisdiction of the government body, if disclosure could reasonably be expected to jeopardize such employees, visitors, persons, or properties. So with that, some of the sections of the KubeCog are considered confidential under the Iowa Code section. As we go through the presentation, I'll note those, and if an element in that particular section is to be discussed by the board in further detail, it will necessitate going to closed session under the Iowa Code section. So plan organization, again, to reiterate what I just said, under Code Section 22.7, subsection 50, we would look at when we're talking about the essential functions, alternate facilities, vital records, and the specific annexes for each of the departments and elected officials, when we get into certain details, a lot of those may fall into closed session. I do want to note that within the plan itself and since its inception, there's been this R that is really to note to elected officials and department heads. While the board adopts the plan, it's a county-wide plan. And so there are certain responsibilities that all of us collectively assume to ensure that if we do have to activate KubeCog, we are able to do so effectively, given the situations we may be encountering and responsibly in a responsible manner. So with that, it goes into a plan overview, and I'm going to try and go chapter by chapter or section by section. The first plan, I'll have to say, was an entire Microsoft Word document. It was very cumbersome. An iteration a year and a half, 2 years ago, it was broken down in different sections. But within the plan itself, they're now each section is a Microsoft Word document, which is way easier to handle and discuss. But the promulgation statement at the very beginning, previously when versions or amendments were made to the plan, I had a table I sent out to all department heads and elected officials with their revisions. I'm suggesting we add it right to here. I think it fits appropriately through the plan. Also, the table of contents, I'm proposing removing the action steps. I need to go back. Removing the action steps, and that's why on this table of contents, you see the error bookmark not defined. Right now in the draft that's before you, that's that way because I haven't re-ran all the pages because of the red lines and strikeouts. That will be corrected, though. Please stop me as I go. I'm going through the yellow sheet, too. And I will tie about the removal of the action steps when I get to Chapter 23, why I'm proposing that. Section 3, the introduction, there are no proposed changes. Section 2 discusses responsibilities. Those are basically grammatical changes. Section 3 is the plan overview, and there are grammatical changes on page 1. And then on page 2, added cross-references to section 12 in the discussion of the KUBCOG management team. Am I going at an okay pace? Okay. And both that last section was in response to the exercises that we've done over the past 18 months to 2 years. Section 4, the purpose and objective statement, there are no proposed changes. Section 5, the scope, just remove the action steps. And again, I'm going to just do that now. My suggestion is that the plan itself needs to remove all the action steps, and then that's an accompanying document that goes with the plan. It goes in respective work programs or whatever. And I think just like our strategic plan, it's a better way to manage the expectations on who's doing those items, how they're getting done, and then how they're reported back to the board. So that, like amendment of a date from August to September, and the action step does not require consideration of the board of the plan itself. Does that make sense? Just separate the action steps?
Yes.
From kind of like we do the cornerstone, the capstone plan, and then we have implementation matrix. Okay. Section 6, the planning assumptions, there are no proposed changes. Section 7, plan maintenance. I would recommend that we modify the annual report date to September 30th rather than June 30th. June 30th is at the end of the fiscal year, so you really, if there are any fiscal implications, they can't be reported back out. So delaying that till September 30th, which will then kind of match up with the schedule we unintentionally have gotten to right now, help going from this point going forward. And then remove the action step. Section 8 are the essential functions. I'm going to wait and come back to that one.
I've got a typo type one for you.
Okay.
On page 1 there of section 8, down in the lower right-hand corner, it says section 24-1. So when you brought it up, you didn't get rid of the section 24.
Okay, thank you.
Orders.
On the footers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the benefit of now having individual sections in Word. And I tried to catch as many as I could. So thank you.
Sure.
But the details on section 8, I'll come back to.
Mm-hmm.
Section 9 deals with risk assessment. We did update all the references to the, and I have this. Nope, I took it out, sorry. To the May 2019 adopted hazard mitigation plan and reorganized the hazards. according to risk by ratings. That was based on a comment from Supervisor Merkin. Margaret Janes, and I want to back up. I sent this out to all county staff, and I'm really appreciative of the feedback I received prior to coming to today's meeting, because I think it's really addressed a lot of the concerns and tried to fill some of those gaps. She asked how cybersecurity is addressed, and I think that fits on Melissa left. I think that fits into one of the terrorism categories in the hazard mitigation plan. Past formats of mitigation or hazards had it as a separate hazard. It was all folded in under terrorism.
Okay, thank you.
Section 10 deals with budgeting, acquisition of resources.
Leanne, just, yes. Could we have a note on here under terrorism, just with stating terrorism, including cybersecurity?
Yeah, I could take the language from the hazard mitigation plan that.
Great.
The definition of terrorism. So those, this was a question that several people are asking as well. How did the ratings come about, the high, medium, low, moderate, and low? Those are developed through the risk assessment strategies that were done as part of the hazard mitigation plan. And all the communities that were involved in that, in the program committee of that, and then that was then folded into each individual jurisdiction plan.
And then I attended a couple of those overwrap meetings. There was an outside consultant that came in to help lead everyone through that.
Section 10, acquisition or budgeting, acquisition of resources. Again, this one removed the action step. Section 11, concept of operations. There were no changes. Section 12, resource management of activated plan. Noted the revised, and these are all in response to the exercises. Kind of changed some of the language regarding the KUBCOG management team acting as an advisory capacity. Now that can possibly change depending on the nature of the incident and activation of the KUBCOG, depending on what level we're at with the orders of succession. Try not to delve into that too much and open. On page one, there was a box that had language, took that out, and then added additional language regarding the ability of elected official to activate elements on his or her own implementation of the KUBCOG. And this is an area for the board to have some discussion, because the question was raised, what if one department or one or two elected officials want to activate the KUBCOG, their annex. The way I envisioned it, at least for the draft for today's discussion, one is okay, they notify the board, and this is elected officials only. If it's two, then the board has to activate the KUBCOG, because then it's actually potentially impacting operations beyond just that individual department. The question was raised whether or not department heads can activate their own KUBCOG. So I'm going to leave that for the board for discussion. At this point, I left it at elected officials and then departments answer to the report to the board of supervisors. And I don't know if you want to talk about that at this point or if you want me to go through the rest of the changes of this chapter.
My feedback on with a department head is that if we're at the level where a department head has to activate it, it's be a large department head, and then we are going to be having implications that would be countywide anyway. So I still feel at least then the supervisors should be able to activate it, or you got the one supervisor left or the CCMT going. But I'm thinking about who would actually
have to activate this, that would be a department as opposed to another elected official. I'm thinking secondary roads is a loan, or conservation is a loan. Conservation, and you know, in its own, even reports to the conservation board in part, but in this would report to us. If we've got that large of a department, otherwise our largest departments report to other elected officials. Am I not correct? I mean, the sheriff's department, and you've got the recorder's office, the treasurer's office. Anybody who has more than six or seven people really end up pretty much reporting to an elected official, except for secondary roads or quasi-conservation. Am I correct, or have I just kind of forgotten another large department?
Well, community service.
Community services is pretty, I guess, under 10. Yeah. Even IT, although IT by its own, certainly they're here in the admin building. If they want to move, there's going to be a reason why we should all look at other people moving. That's what the COOP COG is saying, hey, continuation of operations, especially if we've got to move. That's just my thoughts on this, to leave it as Leanne has it structured right now.
I guess I don't have a problem with that at this particular time.
Can you think of a scenario where you would think that it would be the department head should be able to just activate their portion of it?
Well, I could, with Darren, I keep on looking, he's left. Yes. Secondary roads, it does come to mind. But even that requires a certain level of allocation of resources that could potentially only be taken care of by board action, mm-hmm. if it's especially budgetary impacts or mm-hmm. Personnel impacts, especially at the unions. Maybe there's language that could be added in certain circumstances. I'm just thinking off the cuff right now. In certain circumstances, departments may be able to activate portions of their COOP COG in consultation with the Board of Supervisors. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about things. Something has to happen instantly. And it might be in terms of secondary, but, you know, maybe there's a line. Where does the line come when this is more than normal operations? No, I mean, because they deal with emergencies.
Mm-hmm. I do exactly, and I'm looking at Todd back here, just kind of, you know, because I know Todd, this is something you would deal with secondary roads. But if for some reason they had a fire, you know, and there was gasoline or whatever, I mean, Darren's going to evacuate immediately, right? But I don't know that he necessarily mm-hmm. needs to declare that level of emergency right away. He needs to get his people away, and then that's more of a emergency situation.
That's what I'm
yeah.
just trying to think. Is,
yeah.
We don't want a plan that keeps people from having
right.
from right. immediately
right.
doing what they need to do.
Right.
And maybe that's just it, that we understand that sometimes they say, yeah, I suppose I should have gotten calls first, but likely, you know,
right.
Protection on life and property is always going to be the number one priority.
Exactly.
And that's
and I think any plan, we have to realize that. We're not
going to
stand on.
You didn't call us before you were back here.
Exactly.
Right. Okay.
Let's continue on then.
I did also add groups to the COOP COG management team to add representative from the Board of Health, Conservation Board, Commission on Veterans Affairs, and then added the reconstitution manager as an acting in an advisory committee. And actually clarified that the COOP COG CCMT coordinator sits on the CCMT as an advisory capacity as well.
And I did read through all this, and somehow it's just slipped through my mind. I don't find it right away, but I'd like to come back to the reconstitution manager, because the reconstitution manager is director of facilities,
right?
Correct. And I know that when we had our last exercise, there was some discussion about, do we want to have the director of facilities sitting in the CM or you know, the meetings of that committee when the director of facilities is going to be pretty busy. So it's and so when we say reconstitution manager, that could be a designate also, correct?
Likely, and I mean they're on honestly with the. The CCMT coordinator, mm-hmm. my position, that may be the backup sitting in the CCMT. If this, my position is doing another role for the county. So there is flexibility that needs to be assumed.
Well, would you need to have some language? Because in that second line, it says the facilities management director will serve as their reconstitution manager. So would you need something to say reconstitution manager or their designee or... I don't know. I just I don't know if you need that for clarification.
Well, we do
or not.
Have an assistant facilities director also,
okay.
so that it, so we've already got a line of succession within that department. So that is a,
still
I just wanted
the,
to.
That's the next
yeah.
sentence in there too.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Because I know that came up right away. Whoa. How many points do you? Do you put this person at one time? I think that's true, as Leanne said. For a lot of people, they actually are serving second roles, secondary roles.
And even elected officials, while they're listed, it may be a designee that's attending the CCMT. Coordinator meeting. General added language on saying that members of the CCMT should generally follow Robert's Rules of Order. I think as you see further in, as again, my discussion with you, I have some recommended procedures that we'll do, development of agendas, templates. Part of that, I think, might be some operational guidance for the CCMT, but I don't know that's appropriate to put that in the plan itself. Try to get to a concern that was noted through the exercise. The order of succession, the role of the CCMT is kind of twofold. One, they advise the Board of Supervisors if we activate the CUPCOG, either to activate or when we've activated it. And then two, if for whatever reason the three sitting Board of Supervisors, two of the three are not able to make decisions and the remaining supervisor, that's another de facto board member, so that operations can continue, decisions can continue at the board table until such time that the Code of Iowa is followed and appointment process, a new appointee is put in place. If all three members of the board are unable to exist, I don't know how to say this.
Gone.
They're gone. Then it acts as a de facto Board of Supervisors. It's a huge gap in the Code of Iowa. It does not talk about this order succession or anything at all. So working with ISAC and County Attorney's Office a couple years ago, this is what we came up with. It didn't really spell out those scenarios. And so what I tried to do was make that as clear as I can. And so scenarios A through D, in the section, talk about that. And also then, based on each scenario, says how the CCMT is activated, who is the chair at that point, and then who serves as the vice chair. So any questions on that? Okay. And then clarifying again that the CCMT coordinator reports daily to the CCMT and Board of Supervisors both. And then added, this was part of the exercise too, that the departments reporting to the positions of Director of Internal Operations and Human Resources and Director of External Operations and County Services report the reports to them, those individuals who then turn it into the CCMT coordinator, just to follow that chain of command. And then we did add a backup to my position as CCMT coordinator, should the county outreach and special projects manager not be able to perform duties, the risk manager will serve as a CCMT coordinator for this particular.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions on Section 12? Okay, Section 13 is the activation decision tree. The graphic on page, the second page, we are redoing. Alex had a draft. I agree with Linda, called it serpentine. So it's not ready for your review yet. I'll bring that back at a later time. But it's actually making two graphs, or two images. One kind of similar to this with flow chart, and then one that has more verbiage that complement each other. And it's just, it's not going to be the be all end all, but to help those deciding to activate the KUBCOG, the process to follow. If this is affected, yes or no. If this is affected, yes or no. And then a progression from no activation to limited to full on scale activation to the catastrophic event and or beyond help at that point. So does that make sense that we're addressing that? Just still not with Alex leaving, we're trying to get some other things caught up too. So
anything just
Section 14 is activation policies and procedures. There is a lot of red line strikeout on this, or a lot of red line. We added to the calling tree to really make it clear. The board chair, who the board chair notifies, who the vice chair notifies, who the two director of internal and external operations notify. The next step is to actually set up this calling tree, have it, and discuss how it's kept current, and that's at the end of my conversation here with you. But all the levels are in there, adding also the conservation board. The first iteration I sent out to staff did not have that, and same with Veterans Affairs. Any questions on that?
My question has more to do with that creation and distribution of the information for the calling tree about can we require employees to give out for the purpose of the KUBCOG to provide their cell phones. Can we require them to give a personal email? Can we require them to sign up? And I think somebody asked of this about the Story County, Iowa alerts, that they're signed up for that. So I look at Alyssa about that also, and I guess that's a conversation with HR and the attorney's office. But if we are hindered in being able to do that just strictly for the KUBCOG, for this type of situation, emergency notification, then what are our other alternates on that? Mm-hmm. You know? And then, of course, just like you said, keeping the list current. But I'm thinking if we have an event tomorrow, we don't even know. I mean, it looks at the chair, the board, vice chair. So let's just take a look at what's going on up here. All right. We don't even, Linda's going to notify us and the elected officials. She's chair right now. We don't have a formal vice chair, but maybe Lisa and I split up who the other list to notify, right? But we don't have ways to notify a lot of these people. I mean, we don't know how to reach them.
Right.
We have a list of all of the cell phones, I think, of all the elected officials in department heads.
Okay, then I don't have that list. Is that the list that's hanging there? Yeah, okay, I see what you're saying. But what about emails? Personal emails?
I don't know that I have personal emails,
yeah.
But I don't know that we need personal emails. I think all the department heads probably check.
If we go down, I mean, you know, let's say that it's the admin building that goes down, and after the batteries, there's only limited power into the email, correct? I'm trying to remember from the, without going through this whole document again about who's got power for a while, but or what if we're not sitting in this building, okay? Or where we are, we can't get in. So, I mean, those are the scenarios about we may have telephone access, but we may not have email access or vice versa. So I just, or they're not available to get in. That's just what I was saying, is to get a more detailed list for everybody. So, And does that then, let's go down the list further, department heads, do they actually have contact information for all their people?
That was one of the questions I had, was whether the department heads then have a list so they could contact all their employees.
Most do.
Most do.
They would, yeah.
I put my entire department in my phone.
That's an expectation that we might want to put in here. Then is that department heads then are responsible for having maintaining up-to-date contact information on their employees so they can contact them all.
Emergency.
Yeah, we all have like little cards that we carry that have all of our contact information, spouses or significant others, everyone that's on the board, facilities, IT, which I probably need to update.
Conservation has that as well. Joby does for facility. A lot of the departments do. And one thing that I was going to talk about later is annually when I reach out to the departments and elected officials, that's one of the things I would remind them. And maybe it's quarterly, have you checked your calling tree?
So maybe it wasn't only in this plan,
right,
but in your actions,
yes.
Maybe you want to put communicate with all elected officials and department heads about what information they should keep updated in case they need to know the process. Does that make sense, Lord?
I certainly would need more of the additional information if I were the one to have to make some of the calls. I don't have everyone's contact information.
And with personal emails, let's go back to that, because we do have a list. We have everybody's cell phone numbers. So I figured you text your cell phone call. Would personal emails be an additional use or not? Because I'm assuming that pretty much everybody gets their county email. Of course, we're down, but there other things aren't down. Maybe there would be.
Another form of communication to look at.
Okay.
So I can work with Alyssa and Ethan to.
And Darla does have lists right now of all department heads and officials. I think she's got everybody on that with cell phone numbers. Maybe if you would talk to her and ask her, she could get personal email addresses as well.
Okay.
She can have them.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We are going to section 14. We just finished the serpentine discussion. We're going to activation policies and procedures. Explained what Story County Alerts is and how to sign up for that. On page 2, clarified that the move to alternative facilities requires approval of the board with recommendation of the constitution manager. It seems that the constitution manager could just say that, but when, as the board of supervisors is in charge of facilities, that needs official action, whatever that may look like, though. Added the treasurer's office to tables for equipment and adjusted the totals accordingly. Past iterations of the plan have had a different annex for the treasurer's office, and so it just simply referenced that. And so Ted and his staff provided me updated information to incorporate, and then you'll see some change later in annex regarding that that fits into that as well. I do have some questions on this for the board to consider, and then I did remove the action step. And I've been asked this. We've talked a couple times about and it's not initially for direction today, just to think about and come forward back with. And I've been asked, a couple of people have asked me, it was always the intention we would purchase some of the supplies in these tables and pre-position them in our alternate facilities, our primary alternate facility for the different departments. We never did that. We budgeted for it, and it just, we're still messing with finding the primary alternate facilities, trying to not go into closed session discussion here. We had some changes on alternate facilities, so we did not do that. And then in addition, have we identified, it references reception centers, have we identified where those would be? And to answer that, we have not. So that's a step that would need to be done. How do we require all employees to sign up for Story County Iowa alerts? That we've talked about already. And then, again, the calling tree, how is it maintained and by whom? So those two first questions, the pre-positioning supplies, as we start talking about budget, that's probably a likely time to start talking about that, if not beforehand, before then, but that's not for today's discussion. The next chapter is alternative facilities, which I will come back to because that is, again, an item with confidential information. Section 16 discusses the reconstitution and added the backup position for the reconstitution manager. Section 17 is the orders of succession. So there are some grammatical changes, but then there are some changes that relate back to the exercise. The prior version had some bullet points with the chair, the vice chair, and didn't really clarify that was an order of succession. I knew what it meant because I drafted it, so I probably should have kept that, been more aware of that. And so what we've done is outlined what the decision-making authority is, but then cross-referenced back to Section 12 because that's where the scenarios are as well.
So I'd like to suggest a change. Go to page 2 on 17. It's at the top where there's kind of a small table there. I think that the first entry and second entry are a little bit confusing, all right? I think the first entry should be entire Board of Supervisors, assuming there are three, okay? The second entry should be the board chair and one other supervisor. It's not chair and vice chair because it could be the vice chair is gone. Right? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking that a very clear succession line is entire Board of Supervisors, then the chair with one other supervisor, then the vice chair with one other supervisor, who could very well be the chair, therefore flipping it back up, and then the supervisor with, then the rest of it's fine. It just seemed unclear. It's like, well, geez, if all three are here, is it really only the chair and vice chair making decisions? So that's...
I would agree.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
That does help. Thank you.
There's something wrong with that.
Did you keep on flipping around?
Yeah.
About?
Yeah.
Okay.
Section 18 is the delegation of authorities. I did add a reference to that to referencing the annexes for specific responsibilities. Rather than putting too much detail into this section, because the more detail I added to this section, more likely this section would have to be confidential. Does that make sense?
Can I ask a question? This is discussion and consideration. So you're thinking that we're going to vote on these today?
I can come back.
Well, maybe because I've been keeping track of, we've got a couple other things mm-hmm. that you're keeping track of, which instead of the changes. And rather than go back and enumerate all those right now, were there other changes? Did you have another one, Laura?
That was the first one, and it's just that same chart appears later on in the document.
Mm-hmm. Maybe we will be able to vote on that.
Yeah.
We can keep track of the zone.
Yeah.
I'll pull that page out. Did you have any other ones?
No, not yet. Section 19 is human capital. The change is removing the action steps.
Mm-hmm.
Section 20 is vital records, so cannot discuss that right now. Section 21 is interoperable communications. Thank you to Linda. I removed the references to Blackberries. Although I have to admit, I do still have one. And then remove the action steps.
So are you, I'm sorry, Leanne, are you on section 20?
Section 21.
Okay, so somehow between my
section 19. I ended up with section.
I did too.
The 16, 17, 18 of the reconstitution.
There's an extra 16 in there. That was just my copy.
It threw me what was going on there. Okay, thank you.
That's when you have Leanne running the copier.
No.
Section 21. Again, removing the references to BlackBerry and other personal digital assistants. Add the language regarding phone and or text trees for communication. Add the language regarding maintenance of the county website. Who does that? Initially, I was going to include the names, but that list is always evolving as staff comes and goes as well. So that will be something that we'll keep as part of like a toolkit that adjoins the plan, if that makes sense. And then added discussion on conference call capabilities. And then reference the directions on the S drive, and then those will be printed out and be part of that hard copy toolkit as well, and on a flash drive as well. And then remove the action steps. Section 22 is just removing the action steps. Same with section 23, the old 23. So the new 23 becomes the annexes. And those are all closed session.
Okay, so I'm sorry.
That chapter.
This all yellow here, this is all being taken out.
Yep.
Okay.
That's a repeat of all the action steps that occurred in the plan.
Okay.
In a condensed format. So beyond that, if you have questions on the other four chapters, those are all do require closed session. I'm a broken record, I know, on that one, but I need to remind myself as well so I don't accidentally discuss them. Just some follow-up to do. I do think it would be very helpful to have a flow chart for activation procedures. I've kind of touched on that a little bit with the serpentine. The organizational chart that is in one of the elected officials later on needs to be replaced. That was something that was pointed out. I don't want to go into detail on that, but I know that does have to occur. There's a suggestion, add a picture for the Hickory Grove shop in Chapter 15. Talk about annual items for the board or for the elected official and department head to do as part of the annual review. Reviewing their annexes, which I always ask them to do, but looking again at their orders of succession and delegations of authority, updating those phone trees and communication paths. And then developing an ordinance amendment, and it may very well be a new chapter. I would like some direction today from the board on this. We really don't have language that addresses how disaster declarations are put in play in Story County, what the emergency powers and authorities are. Other jurisdictions, I know Linn County and Johnson County both have some language. I think Pottawatomie County does as well. And those were all really in response to the 2008 flooding. I think it'd be worthwhile to look at the additional of that language. So that it's a clear process and then it's codified as well. So there's not a need to bring it back for annual review.
This has come up since the first exercise, right after the KUBCOG was first introduced. And, excuse me.
Still would like to see this moved up. As possible, the workload of, we had it with the Director of External Operations, then it moved over to Special Projects at the end. And I know everybody's carrying along a big burden right now with a list or whatever, but I'd still like to see that we don't lose this on the radar to get it done, because if we have a disaster, when we did the exercise, for the Huxley, the tornado that preceded an emergency last year, I believe it was. And
unless they had to run and provide me with just a declaration order. So we had to do that. So I do have a declaration order just on my laptop here. But we really should define what it is we can do. You know, we always get together and spend money, but it's the other types of things we can do.
There's a code section that allows county supervisors to not require county supervisors. To declare an emergency in the unincorporated area, and I think you've got that language.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think the authority is there.
It's and I've done a very rudimentary review of other jurisdictions to get a sense of honestly, because I was thinking about trying to build it into this, and I don't see where it fits neatly into our continuity plan. I think it's bigger than that. So I kind of dropped it there because, again, I wanted to focus on other areas and get some directions from the board. Then if it was a standalone ordinance, if it was under Section 1, which is in the Code of Ordinances, is the operation principles, I think it is, of the Code of Ordinances.
So you say direction from us, as in, would you like direction? Please research what the options are and bring back to us. So Linda's brought up one option, but can we learn what the options are? Can we pass our own ordinance? I'm wondering if Emergency Management Commission would like to weigh in, too, at some point.
That's
on this.
That's the language that I'm referring to.
I think that's kind of the direction I'm just looking. As part of the update of the CUCOG, this is a gap that the counties identified that there needs some clarity on what net steps need to occur. So, Leanne, help us ascertain how to fill those gaps.
And you're saying if you've got ordinance language from other counties that you can review, you've got the code language, the permissive language out of the code, maybe if you were to look at those in the county attorney's office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That works. It was what the previous direction was.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah.
So that works.
Well, that works.
Yay. All right.
Thank you. So what else?
I would like to create I haven't figured out how to do this yet, but I'd like to create an executive summary of the CUPCOG, kind of like a to-go version. That's just an idea that's going through my head, but with that, there are a lot of things that need to be part of that overall toolkit, and a simple checklist that elected officials and department heads can have. That's just not something that should be in the plan itself. And then still requesting an email address for CCMT coordinator at storycountyiowa.gov, if that's something for.
What's the hold up on that? What's the hold up on that?
I just haven't done it yet.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. Got it. Sorry.
Something that was brought up at the after action plan, and we just not really clear that was something appropriate to do.
Thanks.
And then develop the meeting packet, kind of like the to-go for the CCMT team. CCMT, yeah, that's right. Agenda template, just operating procedures and guidelines. So with that, and then identifying the personnel and policies, personnel and procedures for both the internal and external communications to support CCMT coordinator and PIO roles. We need to delve deeper into that. Several of us fill several roles. And so if we're in a couple different ones, how are we ensuring that those communication structures and strategies are being met? So that's the follow-up to do, which really is not part of the action in here other than directing me to go ahead and keep those to-do items. So pending no other changes to Sections 8, are essential functions, alternate facilities, vital records, or the annexes. I noted the typo to Section 8 in the footer. the additional definition of terrorism and risk assessment. In the activation procedures, adding the, wait, I didn't write that one down. That's when you were asking me if I was writing it down. I didn't write it down.
Section 17?
Yeah, it's in my plan.
Section
actually.
Section 17, the first one would be the entire board.
Yep.
The second one would be board supervisor's chair plus other.
And then cross referencing that with or fixing in section 12 as well.
Yes.
And Leanne, did you reference the, I think it's section 13, the new graph?
I was just going to, with your direction today, once I have it done, replace it.
Okay.
And
okay.
I run it by you, and then
okay,
it might be a consent agenda because there's nothing confidential about that.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
So, yeah, the image on, no, I think adopt it as it is right now, and then no, that's coming back at a future.
Got you.
Consent agenda meeting. The serpentine image. And thank you for your patience, because this is not an easy thing just to work through presentation or anything, too.
Thank you for your good work on it. You mentioned earlier the attention to detail. So do we then want to approve this or change this as
amended? I'll make a motion that we approve the amended KUPCOG plan with the changes previously noted.
I will second the motion.
Okay, moved and seconded. Is there any further discussion? If not, Olson?
Aye.
Aye.
Merkin, aye. Thank you very much.
My goal is to quickly have this reprinted by our next superintendent election official meeting. I should have to listen to what another budget.
So can you say, so you would like each of them put on their own flash drive?
No, purchase one, when they give them a copy of the plan, give them a flash drive.
Give who's them? Oh, okay. Yeah, see, so do I. So you might want to check at least before we buy all those, but yeah.
Yeah, I just
want
to know that it's not only the goal to do it hard copy, but the additional
funding
as well.
Right.
I really appreciate the idea of having them on flash drives, because we all know that we may not be, here when emergency happens.
Right.
And if
right.
Somebody's got it, we can look at it at home at least. Okay, did we vote?
Yes, we did.
Yes. Okay, we're done. Okay, department report number. Well, my cons will not be here, so he will be submitting on September 3rd, so don't leave me in. We're now going to other reports. To you on the final implementation matrix with CTC.
So I'm skipping the first few slides because you saw those already. The
implementation matrix does break the strategies down to immediate, medium, long, and annual ongoing. This was originally adopted in 2016 November, so a lot of those immediates were past that time frame. The mediums were, if you follow the logical transition, those would likely become immediate. The same with the long, maybe moving back up to medium now. We didn't go to that level of detail, however, because, again, this is delayed. This was to be before you last fall. My goal for today is to go through what staff has indicated are some potential changes for the board to consider, with some notations that have occurred since we originally put this together, and then get some direction from the board on other suggestions, items you'd like to incorporate from the C2C plan. And then I will come back with the implementation matrix for formal adoption. with all the noted changes at a later time. So this is really complementary to all the other strategies we have, or all the other documents we have, the strategic plan, the capital improvements plan. They all work in tandem, but it all kind of builds back to the C2C plan, the goal, and then the specific strategies. Those correlate to action steps in the implementation matrix. So starting with the foundation, and this is the exact language I presented a few weeks ago, so I haven't changed anything. Removing the following, I know Laura, she had some concerns on removing outright local housing trust formation, suggest maybe massaging it, saying encouraging, ongoing, whatever. I, again, just kept consistent with what. And also determining the viability using health impact assessments. That's been done. I just need to come back to the board. So recommend removing those two. Adding the following under EMP-1, developing a plan of potential locations for construction demolition landfills. This is part of the planning development work program. And then amending under infrastructure utilities 1, the language currently says develop implement requirements for groundwater impact analyses. The proposed language is underlined. That matches a change to the plan as well. Any questions on the foundation?
None.
Conservation, natural resources, and recreation. Removing the requirement to map impaired water bodies. The state does that. So we don't really want to reinvent the wheel. The develop water quality at watershed level outreach and education toolkit, that's being done through other efforts. Inventorying and mapping existing below surface resources and exploring including strategies for their protection. Mike did suggest removing this. It is very difficult to undertake this. And then reviewing and considering complete street designs as appropriate in Story County. So when staff first started talking about this last fall, Mike suggested removing this. As we got further into this past summer, Jerry Moore of Planning and Development communicated to me that this is actually in the Planning and Development Work Program to do this, and he has a staff member identified and has started working on this. So given that, I would recommend that the board consider not removing it, even though it shows on the screen. We suggested taking it out because later on you'll see language removing the master transportation plan. But I think you can leave this in, especially when we're talking about trails planning, other design considerations that go with subdivisions, how we implement complete streets, designs to rural roads and subdivision roads is still to be determined as well, but I think that's part of the research that Marcus is doing as well. So I wanted to note that one. Land use, under LU3, add a reference to the work that has been being done with the Ames River and Fringe Plan area between Ames and Gilbert. Again, Jerry did note recently, and I shared this at the earlier meeting in August, that this is already done. So at the time that we were doing the strategies, we had not identified, the work program had not yet been adopted for this calendar year. So you can either include it because it's done, it's on our website, or however you want to address that one. Economic prosperity, remove EP3 as just clarifying, considering in the development of solar farm regulations, that's done, it's codified. I didn't revise this. Leave this one in. I did not revise this from the last meeting. Thank you. That's safe, yeah.
Super.
Oh. You might want to retract your compliments. Trying to manage all these three things at one time has been, you're lucky I don't have continuity of government in this presentation.
Oh, geez.
reviewing minimum wage in Story County. So at the time the plan was originally developed, an implementation matrix, the state had not, action of the state had not occurred in regards to this matter. It has occurred, so this is no longer something that Story County can successfully address. We don't have the mechanism. And then develop and distribute business development toolkit. That's something that's been long done. Transportation, I've already said, developing the countywide master transportation plan, removing that. And then adding the watershed assessment. You'll recall there was a matrix that was developed as part of that. That needs to be added to this.
I'd like to go back here to transportation. I have a note here about another deletion possibility. I wonder why it was under transportation. But anyway, we have in the plan a business development coordinator for Story County at $10,000 per year.
Mm-hmm.
And I suggest we delete that. There's been no discussion about us doing any kind of business development coordinator. And that's really what I feel we pay for our contract with AADC. That's Dustin.
It's looking at, it's in my work program, and I have done just a rudimentary research on it. It's looking at implementing what Ames, the city of Ames, does with the AADC to have an entity that, an individual that is assigned that walks members of the development community through the city's process for development review. It's kind of a, they don't necessarily hold their hand, but it's kind of a negotiator between the two. So when the plan was developed, specifically with the economic prosperity chapter, the discussion was, at least at the staff level, was that something appropriate for the Story County to consider?
Isn't that what Jerry does?
It's a non-staff member.
It's a non-staff member person, but at the same time, I feel that we do a pretty good job here with people. Between our contract with the AADC, between the AADC involvement on most business development anyway, between the staff that we have, if it's in the unincorporated areas when we've got P&D, because it's going to come to them as a plan to begin with. I know that this was something that was thrown in here when this was suggested, but I don't remember in the last 2.5 years anybody having discussed this at all and set this as a high goal.
No, like I said, it's been part of my work program. I have all the information that, like the job description and all that from City of Ames, and they've done some transition there as well with their position as they've had staff move on. I have not brought it to the board for a particular reason. Right. Just I don't know how necessary it is.
I think another thing.
I'm not very clear sense of what the need is.
Yeah, it's one less thing in my work program.
So I'd just like to make a comment because you bring up a good point that when I miss knowing what your work program is, since you work on special projects. When Leanne reported directly to the board still was informed every once in a while, given a list, because Leanne keeps a really great record of when everything's supposed to be scheduled, et cetera. And now that the reporting is through, now the internal director, but the external director, we don't get to see that anymore. And so that's sometimes helpful. It was very helpful when you reported directly to the board that we knew what you were actually focusing on.
Requested, you wouldn't have a problem letting a board member with the work program.
No.
Okay. All right. Great. Super. Thanks. Okay. All right. So I'm up for deleting. Linda, I heard you up for deleting.
I have no problems. I really didn't see that there was a need based on the conversation, so.
So in a nutshell, those are the staff proposed changes or discussed changes. There are other different strategies in the plan that could be activated as implementation steps. That was one thing that as staff, when we looked at it, we asked ourselves. Nothing really rose to the rose to the top because it was a very aggressive implementation matrix to begin with. And a lot of those immediate time frames, they weren't necessarily done in that immediate time frame because we had so much on the plate. Looking back on it, you know, hindsight 2020, immediacy, we might have put out 0 to 3 years, and then medium on 4 to 7, whatever. But we do recommend being flexible with some of those dates as well. And then any other changes the board may have for me, I can incorporate those and then bring them back probably in a couple weeks with the changes for official action.
I have no other changes. I did not either. Thank you for all your work on this, Leanne.
Welcome. Thank you.
Tackled a couple big projects.
At the same time,
yeah.
Right. So are you looking for an actual, let me find this one.
Yeah.
No, I think I got it.
Okay.
As we went through.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You deserve a break today. You do. That's a lot of stuff.
The upcoming agenda items next Sunday is a holiday, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So agenda items will be due tomorrow at 3. Wait, do we have anything that we're thinking? Mike Cox will be here next week, today. Anybody else?
The Whitaker facade grant request, he has decided to, even after I talked to him, move it forward, wants the entire board to make a decision. This one is an exception, and maybe we have some other issues, and Leanne's working on that for us. Thank you. We're kind of talked about that.
On the agenda.
Okay. I'm guessing with our short week, it'll be September 10th possibly instead. I have had an inquiry from a member of the public again about having the board revisit the traffic control situation at 190th and Hyde Avenue. So I mentioned it to Darren, just gave him the heads up last week. I haven't had time to talk to Darren yet, but the previous board last year passed a resolution. We put stop signs east-west in on 190th. Darren left them up for just a few hours and took them down, saying we're really going to have a serious accident because people are breezing right through them. So staff has helped me identify that previous conversation. I'm going to go listen to it again. I'll talk to Darren and stuff. But I guess we at least need to take a look.
You're thinking I think it's 190th and Grant?
Because
Hyde turns into Gretton.
So
yes. I know that area well.
Right.
I've had a number of people that have contacted me as well on that.
So anyway, increase
in traffic, especially since it's been paved north of 190th.
That is when we put the stop signs
yeah.
in. So Darren can come and tell the story again. And we can look at the board last year discussed some other options to help with that, you know, to call attention to this stuff. And I've talked to the sheriff about it, too. I called him, hey, if we did this.
Okay. I see more of the east-west stop. It's the north-south stop. It's the east-west.
Well, they weren't. That's where we put the signs
yeah,
in.
That
and
is.
They wouldn't stop. They just were breezing right through. And Darren said, I got to pull these stop signs.
No, I, yeah. It's just on the north and south sides, there is long waits of traffic.
Right.
Well,
there's no question. I want to bring it back here to this board and then so we can give direction to Darren. The previous board said we're not going to spend any more money, just leave it the way it is, but obviously feedback. Okay, so those are the two things I'm sure that will be coming in the next couple of weeks. We know Herta will be here next week. Yes, I believe it is. No, they're going to call in. Darla helped me. Thank you, Darla. Helped set up the telephones and IT so that they'll just be calling in on that one.
that's it for what I know is coming up.
I just know won't be on next week's, but it'll be probably on September 10th. It'll be a resolution related to Central Iowa Recovery. Thank you. Central Iowa Recovery, yes. And it's our, the 2080. No, it will be the 10th is when I will bring something forward.
Next week will be the Woodard Grant request and FERDA, and the 10th will be the intersection on 90th and High Grant Breton, there, and Central Iowa Recovery. I don't have anything else.
Will we be able to get an update maybe on StoryCom, or has there been any more movement on where we are?
It continues to progress.
Okay.
Yeah,
does it change?
Yeah, we could have an update on StoryCom.
I don't know.
Public forum number two, then. Any issues not on today's agenda, the board can take action, and any members of the public.
I have the CICS and CIR board meetings this week that I'll be attending, as well as the mental health expos that is quickly approaching on Monday, September 16th. So I'll be at that meeting as well.
Okay. I want to thank Des Moines Hazmat, the team that came up that spoke to the local emergency planning commission. We had maybe about seven or eight people from various agencies in the county there. I did inquire if maybe at some point in the future the emergency management staff might be able to take a look at having them come up at a time when we might be able to get more first responders to a session like that, just because it was very informative. And so I think that any time that more education can be offered, that's a good thing. It's just that it was at 1:30 in the afternoon, so we know a lot of our first responders in the county are working other jobs at that point in time. And thank you to the Story County Farm Bureau for the annual meeting, inviting us to the annual meeting. Yes, both Lisa and I did. Yeah, we did. And the speaker was the new dean of the Veterinary Medicine College at Iowa State. It was very interesting.
It was.
So, yeah. This week, tomorrow, I'm participating in a webinar about the new Iowa Workforce Initiative as part of the federal program there. And I have HRDA on Thursday. So I'm done.
Okay. And there's nothing else,
that energy
motion for adjournment?
So moved. Second.
Okay. We're adjourned.
All right. Yep.